A new year will bring new laws in California. Most of them won't change your daily life, but a few will. On Insight, Ben Adler takes us through some of that list, and you can follow along if you'd like to at capradio.org/new laws. Then, a new Cap Radio project titled Great Question. We're using the journalism platform Harkin to partner with you and explore some of the questions on your mind. Randall White will join me with the first effort in this project. It's a question about trees from listener Jennifer Drayton. Jennifer will join us, too, and she'll talk about her involvement in the reporting. Later in the hour, in the final sound advice of 2018, a very merry Hey Listen holiday special. Nick Bruner, who is the host of Hey Listen, will bring us holiday songs and a few of his favorites from 2018. I'm Beth Ruyak. That's Today on Insight. First, the news. From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. Happy holidays to everyone. And I'm starting that way because this is our final live Insight of 2018. And that means it's one more Capital Chat with our Capital Bureau Chief,
yes.
Ben Adler.
One
Here
more.
He is. This is a tradition. Usually at this point, we're looking behind us and ahead because there are always new laws that kick into effect January 1st.
Only a few hundred or so.
That's part
Maybe
of
close to 1,000.
What we'll cover. Before we get too much into 2019, I'd like your take on this year in California government. So let's go back to January 1st of this year, 2018. What was that year like as the dome opened up for business again?
Awkward.
It was awkward.
It was awkward. Three because... assembly members had already resigned due to sexual harassment allegations, and an investigation was plodding along into a state senator, Democrat Tony Mendoza. So that legislature's first day back in January of last year was awkward. Mendoza's colleagues were urging him to take a leave of absence. He resisted, then agreed. Eventually, he resigned to avoid being suspended. And that in part led to the legislature adopting a new process for investigating sexual harassment complaints that will take effect in the coming weeks.
That's some of the new law discussion that we'll have. As the year progressed, that umbrella topic was so important in the country. So too was California's opposition to the Trump administration. We were in the midst of an election cycle. What's your, let's say, short list of adjectives for how the year unfolded?
Ooh, adjectives. I had topics and issue areas
okay.
ready to go. Other than awkward, I think I used up my adjective stash.
Okay.
But I would say the issues that really rose to the forefront in the legislature was less so, perhaps, Trump in Washington, D.C., and more so issues much closer to home, like housing and homelessness and wildfire prevention and, in particular, liability. You've got billions of dollars of damage from fires in past years and, of course, this year in Redding and in Paradise and in the Ventura County area. And this is a moment of reckoning for the state, I think, both in housing affordability and wildfire prevention and liability issues that got great attention at the Capitol over the past year and will get perhaps even more over the coming year. And then finally, the politics. You call it a wave, a tsunami. It doesn't matter. Democrats overwhelmed Republicans. Republicans disintegrated in California politics in 2018. Gavin Newsom led a slate of entirely Democrats who won all the statewide offices. Democrats took back all seven of the battleground congressional races, not just supermajorities now in the state legislature, but as Assembly Speaker Anthony Rendon joked in a recent op-ed, gigamajorities, because mm-hmm. Democrats essentially have three-quarters membership in both houses. And so this is a state as we get ready for 2019 with a new governor coming in, Newsom replacing outgoing Governor Jerry Brown,
right.
and a more Democratic legislature, a state that is poised to inexorably move to the left.
As we look at new laws for 2019, the one at the top of the list on our Cap Radio new laws page, by the way, you can follow along if you'd like to at capradio.org/new laws, is a wage increase that's going to take effect that, you know, Ben, it almost seems like ancient history because it was passed 2 years ago and so much has happened and changed in the state in that 2 years. But that wage increase, has been so anticipated in this state and speaks to a lot of the issues you just listed that people in the state are dealing with.
It has long been a debate over how best to address California's affordability crisis. Is it to raise the minimum wage or is it to cut back on regulations and ensure that, you know, gas costs and electricity costs are lower? Well, the answer from Democratic lawmakers and Governor Brown in 2016 was to pass a law that sets in place a series of annual minimum wage increases staggered to eventually reach $15 an hour and then after that adjusted by inflation. There's also a year-long delay for employees of small businesses, 25 or fewer employees. So for those smaller businesses, the minimum wage will rise on January 1st from $10.50 to $11 an hour. For larger businesses, 26 or more employees, it'll go from $11 an hour to $12 an hour.
Also passed in 2016, a farm worker overtime bill, that law takes effect.
Yeah, so that was a complicated and bitter battle at the legislature, and parts of it took effect previously. But what we have right now is, again, phasing in. So eventually, farm workers will be paid more, will be paid overtime pay if they work more than 8 hours a day or 40 hours in a week at farms with 26 or more employees. You can see that standard being used frequently by lawmakers. But right now, this is being phased in. So starting in January, in the past, there had not been overtime restrictions. But right now, it's going to be 9.5 hours in a day or 55 hours in a week. That's when you are going to get overtime pay if you're a farm worker.
Another new law that you would call a business law actually was passed this year, 2018, and it has to do with sidewalk vendors across the state of California.
Yeah. And so this bill, this law, prohibits criminal penalties for sidewalk vending while allowing local governments to regulate vendors. So I think there hadn't really been any sort of standard, and vendors who were out there may have kind of been in the, you know, just kind of risking it. And nobody entirely knew what to do, the vendors, the local governments. And so now we have basically the state saying, look, you have to let this happen, but local governments, but you can set the rules and regulations and limitations for how it's done.
Let's shift to a new law under the category of children and families that addresses workspace and the increasing number of moms who are at work.
Yeah. So this law requires employers to make private space available for breastfeeding other than a bathroom. Now, previously, that law required space other than a toilet stall, and this says other than a bathroom. And so there are some provisions in there intended to help small businesses that might not have ready space available, that you can, you know, request a hardship, but you do have to show good faith effort. You have to try and you have to do what you can to make your employees who are breastfeeding moms able to do that very important life, a part of life and development of their child.
In fact, employers can face a fine if they don't obey that law. And women can file a complaint if there is an issue there with the Department of Industrial Relations. That's the kind of law that could change your daily life if you're in that category of life experience. There's another law, actually a few under food and sustainability, that are going to affect more of the millions in California. Let's talk about the straws law.
Yes, the straws law, or straws upon request. And it is if you are at a full service restaurant and you'd like to sip your drink through a single use plastic straw. Anyone got a sound effect? Thank you, Beth. You'll now have to ask for one. And restaurants can be fined for repeated violations. So let's stress full service restaurant. This isn't applying to McDonald's. This is applying to restaurants where you sit down, you get a menu, you order a drink, the waiter or waitress brings you the drink. You'll need to ask for a straw if you want it.
That kicks into effect January 1st. It was passed this year, 2018. Another one passed this year has to do with kids' meal drinks.
And again, a similar concept of requesting if you want something. This deals with what drinks should be the default drink option at restaurants that sell kids' meals. So this time we are talking about McDonald's. Right now, oftentimes soda or juice are default drinks. And this law requires water or sparkling water or milk of some sort to be the default drink. You can still get a soda or a juice with your kid's meal, but you're going to need to ask for it.
Let's stay with food for just a moment. there's a law that's called microenterprise home kitchens. It's a concept that may take off across the country. It does sound very California, especially with our farm-to-fork emphasis.
And I would suggest that when that's we'll have that story up in the coming days, and then take a look at capradio.org. There's going to be a lot more detail than I'm able to say. But my understanding is this has to do with folks who might cook meals in their homes and then want to sell and deliver them. And
right.
There are app services that are starting to get set up to provide that. You could think of it as what, a combination of Uber and DoorDash, but
yeah, and
in
for
your
me,
own home.
The freshness is where I connect it to farm to fork.
Yeah.
You know, if you have accessibility to anything fresh and you want to cook it in your home, and then people say, oh, I'll buy it. I know it's already been popular in San Francisco.
But then you have questions about who knows how clean or healthy the kitchen is, right? And you don't know. You're kind of taking it on faith. So there is a public health interest involved. And so this law allows cities and counties to permit and regulate the small-scale sale of meals from home kitchens.
Shifting to a gender law that may affect a number of people, this had to do with identity on state documents. And it gets to a lot of conversation that happened this year, Ben, about the boxes that we check or use
yeah.
in male, female, and how do we define ourselves?
Yes, this has to do with the non-binary gender law that Senate President Pro Tem Toni Atkins, I don't think she was not President Pro Tem at the time, but she passed that law in 2017. And it basically requires the state on a whole host of forms to offer a third option, male, female, and non-binary. But what takes effect on January 1st is over at the DMV. So the DMV driver's license application form will require applicants to choose either male, female, or non-binary. And it is self-selecting. So you pick the one you want and the DMV goes with it and does not question you.
I'm talking with Capital Public Radio's Capital Bureau Chief, Ben Adler, whose brain by this point in the year is
mush.
Packed
<It's>
full.
Imploded.
I was going to give you all kinds of credit, but yeah, I think after the year that it's been, especially election years, it does get to be a holiday. I can't wait for the relaxation phase.
Except
right?
This year we have a four-term history-making governor leaving office and a brand new governor taking office. So there's no rest for the mushy brained.
Which, because you mentioned that, I'll note that Saturday is a work day for you, a rather special work day.
Yeah, we're going to head up to Governor Brown's ranch in Colusa County and have our exit interview with him. You may have heard NPR's exit interview on All Things Considered. It was an excellent interview, and we hope to ask some both some more California-specific questions and also maybe some things that the governor, as far as we can tell, hasn't touched on yet. So we'll see.
At capradio.org/new laws, you can find out more about all the new laws in 2019 that we're talking through. Let's get back to some of those workplace changes that were put in place through and because of the Me Too movement in California.
Sure. And there are three that we're focusing on, although there are, I believe, were a larger list. One measure protects employers who report sexual harassment allegations without malice. That means you're not just doing it, making an unfounded allegation at someone who you're mad at, which I don't think is known to be particularly common. So the question is, well, in the past, if you've put in an allegation against someone, that person might have sued you for defamation. And so this law protects you if you report the harassment allegations without malice from liability for defamation of the people they accuse. And there's another liability thing. What happens, I mean, right now, I guess employers, when asked for reference checks, can be sued for defamation if they say negative things about a past or current employee. So this law would allow employers to indicate during reference checks whether an individual has been determined to have engaged in sexual harassment. That's a lot. In one law.
Right.
There are a couple others. One is quite simple. Bans non-disclosure agreements in sexual harassment, assault, and discrimination cases signed on or after January 1st. So non-disclosure agreements, basically a signed agreement saying, I won't even speak about the existence of being paid money to settle a case over, say, sexual harassment. And then a third Me Too in the workplace law deals with non-disparagement agreements. That's where you agree not to speak ill of an employer. And this law prohibits employers from forcing new employees or those seeking raises to sign non-disparagement agreements or waive their right to file legal claims. But those rights could still be waived as part of a settlement, and that is typical in exchange for a severance package. That is the third law. There's a lot more in this law, SB 1300, and I'd recommend checking it out at capradio.org because one of our reporters, our colleague Nadine Sabai, took a good look at that one as well.
To me, these laws don't mean that you might never be approached to sign a nondisclosure. It may still happen. An employer may still ask you, but the
non-disparagement. Nondisclosures are banned. Non-disparagement agreements where you cannot speak ill. You can sign them for a severance if you're leaving.
The question is whether these things will hold up in court. And that's what became really important over the past year is what was court going to look at? What was the process under the Capitol Dome going to look at? What was legal? What isn't? So to me, these laws clarify going forward in cases of sexual harassment in the workplace, where are hard and fast lines drawn?
And with this last law about non-disparagement agreements, what I believe has been the case was some companies, some businesses, often large ones, were requiring as a standard practice new employees or employees getting raises to sign away, to waive their right to file legal claims against the company and to sign non-disparagement agreements. So if you're going to come work for us, you can't talk crap about us, basically. And as a standard practice, that's now banned.
All right. I'm going to totally shift gears here.
Yeah.
Here's
your segue.
There's a new law about pets.
Oh, you're barking up a new tree.
Oh, you were so waiting for that, weren't you?
Just thought of it in the spur of the moment.
Okay. We do have to touch on this because this is animals are so important to everybody, and there is a new pet law to know about.
Requiring all dogs, cats, and rabbits sold in California pet stores to be obtained from animal shelters or rescue groups. And Beth, I have to say, when we surveyed the newsroom about which reporter wanted to do the story, about half or more of the reporters said, yeah, I want this one.
We do have animal lovers here. Two more categories. They somewhat roll together. Public safety and transportation. There's a small group of laws, so let's cover those.
I'm going to group together two police transparency laws right now. One that requires body camera footage be released within 45 days of a police shooting or when an officer's use of force causes death or great bodily harm. Another allowing public access to police records in use of force cases, as well as investigations that confirmed on-the-job dishonesty or sexual misconduct. The latter was supported by police chiefs, the earlier one opposed wholesale by public safety groups. But the fact is, there's going to be a lot more information out there about some of these police shootings that have been so much in the news, such as the Stephon Clark shooting in
Sacramento. Which inspired much of the discussion and the introduction of the bills that then became law.
Yeah, the concept's not necessarily new. The momentum.
Exactly.
Absolutely. There is a measure that prohibits 14 and 15-year-old criminal defendants from being prosecuted as adults. That one was controversial. The governor signed it after much deliberation. District attorneys were dead set against it, and many victims groups pointing to cases like that of the Davis teenager, Daniel Marsh, I believe, from a few years back. And then gun violence restraining orders got a lot of mention in news after some of the shootings. California has a gun violence restraining order law in effect, but this eliminates fees for requesting it. So a family member or a law enforcement officer who wants to try to get a restraining order to seize guns and ammunition from someone seemed to be mentally ill, that is in effect right now. This new law eliminates fees. And law enforcement can seize ammunition as well as the guns under the program.
There is a DUI deterrence law that kicks in January 1st.
Yes, and this is actually one that will affect you if you drive inebriated. This will expand a pilot program that mandates ignition interlock devices for severe or repeat drunk driving convictions. The pilot program had been in just four counties, including Sacramento, and this law expands it statewide.
Let's talk about motorized scooters for a minute, and then there are also temporary license plates under another driving law.
Motorized scooters, yes. So there's a bill that or a law that'll allow local governments to raise the speed limit for motorized scooters on streets to up to 35 miles an hour or higher on Certain highways with special bike lanes. Motorized scooters like those jump bikes are seen as a future mode of transportation, or in some places, a present mode of transportation. Temporary license plates requires auto... So, you know that when you buy a new car, or if you buy a new car, you get
the
a paper license plate with
paper.
The dealer at. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, toll agencies hadn't liked this, because how do they collect tolls?
Right.
So, from here on out, there are going to be temporary paper license plates issued when new cars are purchased.
With a number, with
some identification
sort of
on it. Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Smog checks. Well, right now you're required to get a smog check for any vehicle older than 6 years old. Right now, the new law is going to raise it to any vehicle over 8 years old, but there will be a $25 smog abatement fee for those 2 years, the 7 and 8 year old vehicles.
Okay. One more.
You
have
I feel like
that.
we're running a marathon. We're in mile 26.
If you have that green and white HOV sticker and or the decal allowing you to drive in the carpool lane.
Wow. Wow.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Colors changing.
You will need a red decal affecting more than 230,000 drivers throughout the state. This is dealing with the green and white HOV lane stickers. HOV is just an acronym for carpool, high occupancy vehicle. So carpool lane stickers. Well, those were for some older low or zero emission vehicles. And now there's just so many decals and so many of those cars out there that that benefit is coming to an end. And you're going to need a red decal for some of the newer cars if you're going to be able to use the carpool lane.
All right. Deep breath. Last time I asked you this question, you only knew part of the answer. So I'm circling back around. What's the plan for the governor-elect Gavin Newsom's inauguration?
What is announced publicly is that he will take the oath of office in a ceremony that begins around 11 o'clock in the morning on Monday, January 7th. And of course, Capital Public Radio will have live coverage. We're teaming up with KQED. Beth, you'll be in this room. I'll be down at the Capitol, and our colleagues from KQED will be there and in San Francisco. And we're going to have a really good show for folks, and we'll have live coverage throughout the day as well, including on Insight that morning. A couple other things that we know. Is that the night before, Governor-elect Newsom will host a concert at the Golden One Center. We don't have further details on that yet. But I would say if you're taking bets, there's a decent chance that the rapper Common will perform, because Common performed at Newsom's election night party and at a previous Democratic Party convention on Newsom's behalf. And that afternoon, that Sunday afternoon, the governor and first partner, as she wants to be called, Jennifer Siebel Newsom, will host an event for families at the Railroad Museum in Old Sacramento. Again, we don't have further details on that yet either.
All right. And you have to leave us with a little bit of projecting. You didn't really have adjectives other than awkward for the beginning of 2018. As 2019...
Fiery for 2018 in politics and in fires.
Okay. That's right. That would be a good one for 2018. So 2019, what do you think we're going to see or feel or experience?
It is going to be a new era. I mean, that's not a one pithy adjective, but a new era in California politics. There's no other way to describe an institution like Jerry Brown retiring off to his ranch, and a new governor who is perceived and certainly campaigned to the left of Jerry Brown, working paired up with a legislature that is overwhelmingly Democratic, more so than the legislature that Jerry Brown worked with. And that doesn't mean that there's going to be this huge appetite to pass tax increases, even though the votes are there more than enough. It's likely that enough moderates will be able to block that. What is, however, true is that when you've got three quarters majorities, it's a lot easier to get to a simple majority for, as one Capitol watcher pointed out, bad bills that might be on good topics, well-intentioned but poorly written, a lot easier to get them through the legislature. So I'm going to be fascinated to see to what extent the Speaker of the Assembly, Anthony Rendon, the Senate President Pro Tem of the Senate, Tony Atkins, and the new governor of the state of California, the 40th governor in a state nearing a population of 40 million people, Gavin Newsom,
right,
to what extent do they say no?
Well, thank you for a terrific year of reporting. You had important contributions to us at Insight, along with your producer, Sally Schilling, some great podcasts. I want to say Nadine Sabai has been a great addition
absolutely
to the team. And earlier this year, our colleague Ben Bradford, who has since gone off to Marketplace, you just rock at the Capitol, really. So Thank you. Congratulations.
Thanks, Beth. And congrats to you on another strong year of insights and more to come, starting with that inauguration day. Actually, before that, we'll have Jerry Brown's exit interview on part of Insight, I think.
We will spend time focusing on the outgoing governor. Yes. And you can check out the California Laws series taking effect in the new year at capradio.org/newlaws. Happy holidays to you and yours, Ben.
And you as well.
You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. Listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. If you were to hang out in our newsroom for a day or two or six, chances are you would hear this phrase, "Great question." So we've turned that idea into a new Cap Radio project, and we're calling it, are you ready for this? Great question. We're using a reporting platform that you might know. It's called Harkin. And in the studio with me to explain is Cap Radio host and occasional Insight guest host, Randall White. Hi,
yeah.
Randall.
Well, it's great to be on this side.
I'm flipping you to the other other right. chair today. Will you explain this project a little more?
So some people may know, if you've ever been to Chicago and listened to the NPR affiliate there, they have one called Curious City in the San Francisco Bay Area. The KQED has something called Bay Curious. And what it does is it sort of flips the model on its head in the newsroom, where instead of standing around in the newsroom and we figure out what the news stories are, and then after we publish the stories, the public then sounds off and says what they think about that story. The public is the first, the listeners are the first people to jump in and say, we think this is a story or this is a question we would like to have answered. And then we go through those, find the ones that, you know, are valuable stories, we believe, for the community, and then report them out. And in many cases, we bring in the question asker so that they can be an integral part of the story.
So the impetus becomes you, the listener or the reader. And we have our first example. It is a question about trees, and it came from listener Jennifer Drayton. Jennifer's in the studio, too, to talk about this experience of becoming part of the Cap Radio reporting team. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Did you know what you had set in motion with this question?
I had no idea. This cascade of excitement. Regarding the question series, I'm so excited to be like the maiden voyage.
Where did this begin? How did this begin?
Well, our digital team put out a blast asking for questions. And we got about 100 right out the gate. I mean, seriously, within about 24 hours.
And this is through Harkin.
Through Harkin, which then it's a platform that you can plug into Facebook or Twitter or email, all those different ways. And it exists on our capradio.org website.
And just so you get the spelling correctly, it is H-E-A-R-K-E-N.
Like Hearken.
Yes. So if you're looking it up and thinking, I'm not finding what you're talking about, spell it H-E-A-R.
Yeah. Okay. So the Harkin plugin, which we, for here at Cap Radio, we call Great Question, it didn't have a name at that point. And Jennifer somehow stumbled upon it. And I'm not sure, did you use Facebook or...
No, I received an email from
an email.
You. Yeah,
okay.
An email survey question saying you were soliciting ideas for local stories.
Yeah.
And just off the top of my head, I was standing in line at the grocery store and I got this great email and I asked and I rattled off a question about trees.
So fill in a little bit of the backstory. You're new to the area.
I am new to the area. I am a Sacramento resident as of about 4.5 years ago, originally from the Bay Area, yet another annoying Bay Area refugee. I moved to Sacramento to retire, honestly, and looked for housing for several years and found a wonderful home in Arden Park. And part of the appeal of the home was these just very impressive tree canopy, just beautiful trees. And I'm from Oakland and being a city girl, I had never had a backyard before. And now I have both a front and a backyard. It's an embarrassment of riches.
With gorgeous trees, I've seen them.
Gorgeous trees.
So what was the question?
So my question was, Sacramento has this beautiful tree canopy, just enormous. Everyone knows Sacramento for its trees. And I began to think, part of the appeal of my particular home is the tree canopy. And I began to think and we moved here in July, so pretty hot as an Oakland resident. It was a
temperatures
shock.
Are not familiar
you can say
with
a shock,
it.
Definitely yes. A shock. And so I thought the tree canopy would definitely be helpful in keeping things more moderate, and that just sort of prompted me thinking, how much benefit do we get from our trees here in Sacramento? In terms of weathering our weather, essentially.
And where did they come from?
Mm-hmm. from? And how did Sacramento come to have this enormous variety of trees? Was it part of a plan? Was it just happenstance? Do we have a particularly conducive climate to growing trees?
I think there are some urban myths about how various trees got here, but you did set some reporting in motion. So what happened next?
Well, we called in several experts, and Sacramento happens to be home to them. And in fact, one of the interesting things, Beth, is Paula Pepper is a researcher who is really known as the expert in this area of the history of Sacramento's trees. Wouldn't you know, she lives just houses away from Jennifer, around the corner in Arden Park, and knew your home from many years ago, because she grew up there, right?
Exactly. Yeah, she grew up in the neighborhood and knew the original owners of my home before it was remodeled.
You wouldn't expect that all
I'm
to
sure
come together.
She knew your trees, too.
Oh, she did. She went in my backyard and said, I know that cork oak. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So this concept of Sacramento being a tree city goes back, according to her research, to the Gold Rush days.
Yeah, it does. It goes back. The very first reference to it was in 1855. There was an article written. And at that time, it was known as the City of Plains, meaning not like the fly.
Open
but
field
flat, open
plains.
Fields, right. So the City of Plains. And a reporter said, in no amount of time, this will be known as the City of Trees. Mm-hmm. And that phrase really caught on, and by the turn of the century, in the early 1900s, it was being used all the time.
So you spent some time in the history, but then you moved ahead to the impact and the place of the trees, and there were more experts who had input.
It's true. The Sacramento Tree Foundation, it really has a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this. And Kevin Hawker also he's the city's lead arborist. They all weigh in on the fact, as does Paula Pepper, that the more trees that surround where you live, the healthier you are, both mentally and physically. It shows lower rates of diabetes, lower rates of depression. And then, as Jennifer pointed out, the canopy acts as a major cooling mechanism, which has dropped temperatures, can drop temperatures on a street by as much as 10 degrees, which is a big deal. If it's 100 versus 90, that you can feel the difference.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You must experience, without really realizing it, that sense of well-being. You chose big trees in your yard.
Absolutely. I'm happy to be a Sacramento resident, and the trees definitely contribute to that. Absolutely.
Yeah, the number one tree right now in Sacramento is something that a lot of people call a sycamore, but it's actually called a London plane tree. And Jennifer, you have one of those on your property.
My neighbor has one of those.
Your neighbor has one, yeah.
My neighbor has one, yes.
And, they have that sort of mottled bark. They're beautiful trees, but there's too many of them now. There's more than 15% of the canopy lies in that area. The Tree Foundation and the City of Sacramento weigh in on which trees should be planted on your private property and also on the streets and in the parks and that sort of thing. And Tori Dunavant with the Tree Foundation, through the Sacramento Shade Program, which is funded by SMUD, they've changed their metric for which trees should be planted. And I just want to hear from Torin here, who explains why.
We shifted over to using carbon as the main goals for us. That still would take into account energy savings and rainfall interception and all the different benefits that you would get. But the more carbon a tree stores through just in its own mass, and then how much carbon it helps to avoid by shading buildings and things like that, that's what's setting our goals now. And so our team members, we're planting about 10,000 trees a year. You know, they are thinking about what's the ideal planting location at everyone's house to get us our highest carbon number.
So shade used to be the main factor, right, and it still is a factor, but these denser hardwoods store more carbon. And so they're moving toward things like you see a lot of Chinese pistache, which you have on your street, Jennifer. They're bright red in the fall time. They're beautiful. They're actually a very hard wood, and they store a lot of carbon. Another consideration, Beth, that is affecting the trees that are planted is climate change. And Kevin Hawker, again, the lead arborist for the city, says as temperatures rise in California experiences these prolonged dry spells, some trees will not adapt as well as others.
Through time, you know, two trees in particular come to mind when we mention that topic, and those are birches and redwood trees. Now, those are two trees that in nature grow next to rivers and need a lot of water, a lot more than people think. And if you look around the city of Sacramento, you're not going to find more than a handful of birches. They've already kind of faded out. Both because of lack of water and extreme heat.
A tree fading out can be dramatic.
Right.
I had this experience just last night. I was sitting in my living room and I heard a huge crash. And I thought a branch had come down in our backyard. Go outside and it's dark and I can see far more stars than I usually see in my backyard. And this very, very old oak that sits on a hillside decided time's up.
Mm.
And that was it. And luckily it dropped into the gully and not the other way on any of our roof. But the trees come and go at differing lengths and differing lives.
They do.
And our trend in choosing trees over the years has a lot to do with that turnover in our city.
It really does. And as we take into account climate change, and Sacramento is projected to be warmer and drier, and Kevin Hawker, who we just heard from here, says that is going to play into what we see planted 30 years from now, and it may not look like the trees that we have here today.
One of the first things that you do is you look at other areas that have a similar climate to you. And we have what's called the Mediterranean climate, and there's very few places that have a climate that's similar to us. And so you look to see what trees are faring well in those areas. We also look to our neighboring local areas that are just a little bit hotter than we are, such as Arizona, New Mexico, and the like. And we take a mix of trees that seem promising from those areas, and we try to work with those. So off the top of my head, a type of Palo Verde, which is common in the desert southwest, and I believe we're looking at type of eucalyptus that's from Australia, but it's not the kind of eucalyptus you're familiar with seeing. So we're looking at some of those as promising options.
I thought about that when the oak went down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there isn't the water to sustain it and the land to sustain it, but thinking about Palo Verde all over town?
It doesn't seem.
It's kind of interesting, isn't it?
It's not congruent with what we have right now, but it might be 30 years from now.
So, Jennifer, what'd you learn? What did you come to understand through this experience and all this information about trees?
One of the things that struck me was that in Randall's research and talking to these experts is the person who originally planted trees in Sacramento to start it as a tree capital was attracted to the trees for the same reason I was attracted to my backyard in Sacramento. The trees were it's warm here in the summertime, and the trees provide shade and cooling mechanisms, and I thought it's just an interesting bookend that it started for the same reasons that I hear, you know, hundreds of years later, am attracted to the tree canopy.
Yeah.
It's one other reality. You've been in this area now how long?
About four and a half years.
Okay, let's check back when you've been here seven. And
right.
Let's see if you're developing any allergies to those trees in your neighborhood.
Yeah, the allergies, that's a whole other.
The allergies are something to contend with, but I'll put up with that just so because it keeps me from getting sunburned.
Ah, that's a great attitude. That is Jennifer Drayton. Hers was the first question in a new Cap Radio project titled Great Question. Randall White, our afternoon All Things Considered host and sometimes Insight host too, is guiding some of this. So if someone else has a question, how do we connect?
Well, right now, this story is the very first story you'll see at capradio.org. So if you go to capradio.org, you can listen to the piece, and there we'll link you to the Great Question software, I guess, and so that you can ask your question. And Beth, one thing that we're going to do in the future, which is fun, because we're already working on a couple of other stories right now, is we're getting so many story ideas. We want to put it out to you, the listener, to let us know
which ones.
So we will take three or four that are our favorites in the newsroom, put them up there, and then we'll put it up for a vote. Whichever one comes out on top, that's the one we'll report on.
I think trees are such a great common denominator and such a definition of this area that you hit on a good one. Well,
absolutely.
Welcome officially to the area.
Thank you so much.
And happy holidays. Enjoy the fact that those trees are going to have leaves on them through Christmas and New Year's.
Absolutely.
Which
yes.
doesn't always happen. And Randall, thanks again. It has been a hectic month for me, and I love knowing that you step in here and just handle it like a pro.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Beth. I'm glad I could do that for you.
Yeah. Happy holidays.
Likewise.
So there is more at capradio.org, and this is Insight. We'll be back in a bit with some holiday music. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Hey, listen, host Nick Bruner is lighting a musical Yule log. Oh, there's a phrase to try to say a couple times. A musical Yule log in this week's Sound Advice. He's here with holiday songs and a few highlights of 2018. Welcome at this almost end of the year.
Thank you, Beth.
This year in music, how was the experience for you?
It's been great. It's been a really good time to be, I think, a local music fan in Sacramento. We have, just through a handful of in-studio performances we've had here at Cap Radio, there have just been some great relationships and some new artists popping up, and some artists that we'll hear in just a little bit releasing their second and third records, and it's an exciting time for all sorts of genres and to be part of the Sacramento scene.
You're in the spirit. Let's start with a little bit of holiday music.
Well, I'm nothing if not a traditionalist, Beth, so let's play a track here that kind of sums up my feelings on the holidays. Just a take on the Carol of the Bells. That song is so difficult to listen to.
I was feeling split brain. I was okay. Wanting to listen to both tracks.
Okay, so that's actually Carol of the Tubular Bells, and it comes from an artist called Thor Harris and Dumb Numbers, and it's on Joyful Noise Holiday Party Volume 2. I'm listening to it, and I'm thinking, God, this just sounds like a, so it starts with a toy piano, and it's just the typical Carol of the Bells, and I'm thinking, I'm hearing, what is this? What's going on? What's in the background? What's happening there? And it's somebody constantly going, don't go insane, don't go insane, don't go insane. And then he starts to kind of just get like a step off. And it goes for two minutes and 48 seconds. And if you can make it through the whole thing, there's a rich reward at the end because it morphs into the theme from The Exorcist.
Oh, my Lord.
It's really hard to listen to. And
You can't really say happy holidays with that one.
No. But like I said, it does. I'm ready for this year to be kind of done. In spite of like all the great stuff that's been coming out musically, I'm ready to move on to 2019, see what's next. And that just kind of like, yeah, it's the holidays.
That's what I thought I was going to hear you say. Yeah, I really thought somewhere in this message was going to be this deep breath out, exhale, and let's move into a new one. I think a lot of people are with you on that for a lot of reasons.
Sure.
And a new year brings a lot of hope. Before we get there, let's hear a little bit more holiday music.
Absolutely. So we'll play some sweet with the salty there. This is actually some of the most good-natured fun I've had with holiday music in a long time, and it comes from a trio of local rappers.
If you ain't got the bag, Moody ain't rolling with you. And Kris Kringle got them chippers like Pringles. Word to Mrs. Claus, catch him when she on the sauce. And eggnog, you might get your head bobbed. Dear Lord, I forgot your birthday. Too busy getting gifts, I didn't want in the first place. All I could say is thanks. And try to play it off like it's fresh to save face. What can I say about my boy Pusha Slay? When you see the red bean, get up out his way. He hates the holidays, got him working like a slave. It's for the fawns, they get anything squirreled away. So don't play, don't confuse him for dancer. You got questions, he got answers. Head of the pack to get Santa a clear view. Coming to a chimney near you, stay tuned.
Oh, I was just liking that part.
Well, the whole track is terrific. It's called Rudy, and the vocalist you heard on that verse was Poor Majesty, who was one of our in-studio guests this year. The track comes from the 12:25 a.m. mixtape by local rappers and producers Mahdi Bush, Brew Lee, and Vanglorious. And it's great. It's just, it's good-natured fun. It takes me back to the track Christmas Is by Run DMC. I couldn't, mm-hmm. like, it's hard to pull those two apart in my mind. It's just, it's great. It's mm-hmm. it's terrific. So if you're still looking for a holiday party record, you can download that sucker at Mahdi Bush's Bandcamp website right now.
And the title of the album again is
12:25 a.m. mixtape.
Okay. And you have a holiday music special this weekend?
Yeah. Yes, I do. If
hey
I sound
listen,
hesitant, Beth, it's
Saturday
because
night.
I'm not 100% sure what's going to be in it yet. But yes, there's going to be a lot of tracks from contemporary artists doing spins on holiday music, wintry themes, some snow, because I kind of miss the snow here in Northern California. But
it's optional. You just have to drive
optional.
Up the mountain.
That's a good point.
Yep. And there's plenty of it right now. Who knows how long it's going to last, but it's there now. He is Nick Bruner. He's the host of Hey Listen Saturday nights at Cap Radio. In looking back in the year that passed, you had a nice pick that was highlighted by NPR Music, and you continued to do some work for NPR Music. But let's talk about some of your favorites.
So let's talk about that track specifically. So this one is called Belle Isle by Anna Birch. And this was an album that I just kind of was submitted to me in the middle of the year. And it was pretty nondescript, but I loved it start to finish. And wrote about this track for NPR Music. And then shortly thereafter, I'm not saying it's because of that article. I think NPR was hip to it at the same time. But she has had a lot of exposure through NPR and through the public radio system as a result of this record. Her name is Anna Birch. And this track comes from her album, Carry the Curse.
I found myself in a new city. I met you again.
And that track kind of like it inspired in me another like love that I have that I sort of had forgotten about. And that's kind of like this like Western kind of lap steel sound. Yeah. And so there was a lot of like records that was just glomming onto that sound a lot this year. And a lot of that had to do because I love that track, Belle Isle, so much.
I think you're right. The sort of country kind of sway or swing to her voice. It's really beautiful.
And it's the only track on that record that kind of has that flavor about it. Everything else is pretty much like, you know, like bubblegum pop, indie rock, fun, really well-crafted music. But yeah, I just really like that. I like that texture in that track.
All right. One more.
Okay. Let's go back to the local scene. And this is the third album released by the band Screecher. I was really taken by this track just from the jump. The second I heard it, I'm like, I've got to pick up this record. I've got to go out and meet this band. And we did. Filed a feature on them. It was terrific. I'll shut up. This is Waiting for a Light from the album Old Hand, New Wave.
you're right. You just said a goth gray slick.
Yeah.
A little bit of that sound.
The vocals by Liz Mahoney. The band, again, is Screecher. Yeah, the last I spoke with that band was in February of this year, so I think it's high time for a check-in to see what 2019 holds for that group. They're great. I mean, if they're this kind of like doom, it's got like a doom and gloom heavy sound, but it's uplifting in its own way. It's rock and roll. It's great. If you can ever get a chance to see Screecher perform live, I highly recommend it.
Which is like creature with an S in front of it.
Precisely.
Yes. You know, you and I have been doing this for 7 years,
yeah.
Sound advice, music segments. I just want to, at the end of this year, put in a plug for the work that you're doing that people might not know, because you produce so many fun spots, so many sound spots. You do so much work during Fun Drive, Nick. And I think if there was a kind of a timeline of your creativity and how you use voices, sound, and music together, there would be quite an arc in how you've grown and how creative you've become here. And it's work that nobody might really notice or recognize.
It's a lot of fun. In regards to Fun Drive specifically, it's my favorite time of year. It really is. It beats out the holidays. And it's basically because there's a lot of like togetherness here at the radio station, and it's the best time for, in my estimation, for us as a radio station to talk with everybody who makes it happen. And it's really edifying, and it's terrific. It's the reason I chose public radio specifically as a career and sought it out, and that is because of the listener interaction and that kind of community aspect of things. So the more I can do to highlight that and connect with people who listen, and the more I love it.
Well, your creativity and your inspiration inspires other people, including those who work with you. So cheers to a really good year.
Well, thank you kindly, Beth. Right back at you.
And a new one coming up. Thanks, Nick. Hey, listen, the holiday special Saturday night, hosted by Nick Bruner. That's this week's Sound Advice. That's Insight for today. And in fact, that's Insight for 2018. I'm Beth Ruiak. Our producers are Jen Picard, Cody Drabble, and Bert Johnson. Our technical director is Mark Jones. Our engineer today, Anthony Van Hook. Insight's executive producer is Joe Barr. Thanks for joining us, and have a safe and happy holiday season. We'll be back with new live shows in the new year.